Tickets, please have your tickets ready.
Children under five must wear safety.
And then children first. Seasickness makes me so nauseous.
Welcome to the Dreamboat Podcast. I am Scott. With me, as always, is my co-host,
Connor.
Connor, your two captains here. We are ready to fill our sails with your dreams.
With your wind.
With your wind.
Your dream wind is powering our sails.
Oh, man. Connor, I've got something a little different that I was thinking we could start with today because I read something really interesting in the National Geographic.
Is it about cats?
It's about dreams. Oh. Dude, our cat podcast is tomorrow.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, lay it on me, man. What did you find? I'm a Nat Geo kind of guy.
So, in 2013, apparently, there was a neuroscientist who was pretty committed to the idea of recording dreams, which is great because I think we've spoken about this in the last couple episodes.
Well, Scott, we record dreams.
Well, we write them down in a book, yes, but I'm talking about a machine, like Matrix style, that you plug into your head or something in the future, and you can, you know, sort of upload them and show them like old family photos or family movies to friends all around you. This is the one where I have, you know, grapefruits for hands, and you can just show everyone, and it's cool.
That would be interesting. Tell me more.
Okay, well, in 2013, neuroscientist Yukiyasu Kamitani had test subjects take hundreds of brief naps in an MRI machine, repeatedly waking them up so they could describe their dreams, which sounds like, if you'll pardon me, a nightmare.
Oh, man, you did it. MRI machines, I don't think I've ever had one. Is that the one that's really loud that, like, makes the really big sounds all the time when you're in an MRI machine?
I think it's the one that looks like that thing from Fifth Element that reconstructs Lilu from the fist, you know? You know what I'm talking about? It's like the big one with the big magnet, and so you can't have fillings or else it'll, you know, fly up into it. Anyways.
MRI machines are noisy. I was just thinking about how you're going to take a nap in a noisy machine because it's the one that has the magnetic fields and can read electrical activity and all that stuff. Anywho's, he probably used earplugs.
I've been sleeping next to, like, right next to a train for the last 4 years. The brain is an amazing thing, Connor. I don't think you understand.
So tell me more about these naps.
Okay. So they scanned these people's brains while they were sleeping. And basically what they're trying to do is come up with a sort of, like, dream language. Because once they can associate a concept, you know, they'll wake the guy up and be like, what'd you dream about? And he'll be like, oh, I dreamt about a wombat. And they'll be like, okay, so now we know this is that specific brain pattern for wombat dreams. And
because
they'll just kind of move
MRI machines can read brain activity, and they show the areas and the locations in the brain.
Yes.
As they're being stimulated by thought or
exactly
any sort of electrical synapse.
And it sounds to me, oh God,
he did it.
So, where was, that was actually really good. So they're trying to, I guess, make a language so that they can reconstruct dreams based off of these patterns that the brain is making. I'm going to just read the end of it here because this is a nice little way to put it here. It won't be possible to produce a precise recording of human dreams until scientists discover how dreams originate in the brain, says Jack Gallant, a professor of psychology at UC Berkeley. Or they build an encyclopedia of brain activity that corresponds to every single thought. This is like a huge undertaking.
Oh my gosh.
This is like, it's like mapping the genome, but for your thoughts, like for brains.
So then you basically are making in somewhat a mind reading machine.
I guess it would probably work for both. Yeah. Right. If you got it to, that is spooky. But yeah, a little dream snippet science there. I thought that was interesting.
So for now, they have people nap, and then they can see that they're in REM sleep, and they wake them up and go, what's going on?
Right.
And
they have language. The final line here is you have a language, but nothing it references to, which is difficult.
So you can tell that you're dreaming about an apple, and you can tell that you're dreaming about a car, and right. then you come out of the dream, and the scientist goes, "Ah, oh, voila, Richard Scarry."
That's your busy. That's a busy town dream. I know that pattern. Yeah, like the scientists all just. That's a busy town dream.
I was a worm, driving a car.
This is like pretty
red, delicious.
Little wheels on my apple.
That's interesting stuff. Although I don't know how soon everyone's going to be able to hang out in an MRI machine.
Yeah.
From what I know about insurance, those things are pretty expensive to operate. But hey, it seems like a really cool idea there. Now, Scott, indeed. I think what I will do is I'm going to take the link to this article and I'm going to put it there in the show notes for y'all dream boaters out there.
It's a very short article. It also has a very cool image of Google's deep dream algorithm making a weird, crazy photo out of an image fed to it.
I have stumbled across some of these when choosing some GIFs for our social media postings.
That's a whole other thing, but I do want to get into that later. That's some pretty crazy stuff going on there.
That we shall. Have you had many dreams lately, Scott?
No, I haven't. That's kind of why I wanted to bring this up, too, because it's been kind of hard for me to... I mean, I have been dreaming, but mm-hmm. I'll just wake up, like, stressed out, and the details are... I can feel them dripping away out of my mind, and it's just I can't remember at all. And so mm-hmm. when I read this, I was actually hoping that... it was a kind of sporadic Google there, but I was like, I wonder if there's a way to record your dreams. And it turns out, kind of. Maybe eventually.
Yeah. Well, there is one other way to record your dreams, and that's when you wake up, you write them down on a piece of paper, and then you type them out, and you send them to dreamboatpodcast@gmail.com. I recommend everybody who listens to give it a try, record your dreams the good old-fashioned way, send them to us so we can digest them and tell you what they mean. Hey, I had someone who did that recently.
Oh, yeah? Got a good submission?
I did, from my partner... and roommate and girlfriend, Alyssa,
nice.
Sent me, us, a dream.
Lay it on me, daddy-o. Little daddy-o. All right, never mind.
Goes a little something like this. I was babysitting, and the mother left money for me and the home health aid. So there's someone else in the home. We tried dividing the money, but we couldn't because I couldn't read the bills. And the home health aid tried explaining to me it was because it was Thai money, and it was a lot of it, and that the coins were really important too.
Oh, like money, like Thailand money.
Thailand money.
Okay.
So I went to the grocery store, and inside my cart was an animal of some sorts, perhaps a dog. And I was moving through the checkout line, and a black octopus came out of nowhere and went inside the animal in my cart. It moved and slithered through it. Someone said it was hunting. And I asked the clerk if they could remove the octopus from my dog. And so they wheeled the animal over to a side area where as soon as they started to do the surgery, I threw the octopus up.
Whoa.
And I woke up coughing.
Whoa, the twist. Oh, man, that's actually really bonkers.
Yeah, there's a lot going on in here.
Okay, dang, I don't even know where to start with that one. I know where to start. Actually, we need to get a Thai dream dictionary.
Well, I know she has traveled to Thailand, so that's in some ways okay. like a reference. But foreign currency...
Yeah, that's a good one.
This is an interesting one.
Get old, good old dream moods going here. Oh, dream moods. Here's so silly. Oh, okay, that makes sense. Guess what octopus might mean? Just as a like freestyle here.
Something sticking to ya.
Man, just dream moods hamming it up. I swear they just go entirely off of, like, you know, wordplay. But to see an octopus in your dream means that you are entangled in some sort of difficult matter and your judgment's being clouded. That squid, I think, I'm not certain.
Ink stuff.
Alternatively, the octopus indicates that you are overly possessive. To see two octopuses in your dream represents a codependent relationship. So I do actually like the judgment being clouded or being entangled in something difficult.
See what we have octopus in J.M. DeBord's Dream Interpretation Dictionary, Symbols, Signs, and Meanings.
That is the Rad Owl on the Dream subreddit, for those of you that like to post on Reddito.
So this is usually says, the octopus is usually derived from its tentacles and the way it engulfs its prey. It can symbolize a situation or a problem that has many facets or layers. It can also symbolize the ability to camouflage and squeeze through tight spaces, say like a dog.
Whoa.
No, it doesn't really say that. It says squeeze through tight spaces. I added like a dog. It's going to be a pretty tight squeeze.
Okay, so Dream Mood's not far off from Mr. DeBord on that one. I actually agree with that interpretation. I think that a lot of these animals that we talk about tend to have symbolic meanings that are tied very closely to their behavior in real life. So, like you said about the catching prey and stuff, I can see the, especially like a black octopus is probably just like a really gnarly, like difficult thing. Have we looked up the color black yet in dreams? What that would mean?
Let me see if I have anything here.
I know we've done blue a few times.
So based in the Rad Owl's book here, is associated most commonly with mystery and the unknown.
Well, okay.
Specifically the unconscious mind, perhaps.
Just dreaming about dreams again.
Here we go. A black dog can symbolize the dark side of a friend. A black snake can symbolize worrying about somebody's intentions. So perhaps a black octopus could symbolize a darker or more difficult part of a multifaceted problem or a situation.
That's a real doozy then, if that's true, right? That's like a mini boss of a problem.
If you're juggling several different things, it could be some of them are going to be easier to handle than others, keep track of than others. If we're thinking of this as a multifaceted or multi-layered entangling and snaring, multitasking.
And having hidden layers to it that are probably sort making it even more difficult.
Now, vomit.
Yeah.
Simplest way of describing vomiting is that you need to relieve yourself of something. You can't hold something down anymore.
Right, so, we had that one in an earlier episode.
I believe so. But to not,
It was a good thing, I remember, sorry.
To need to rid yourself of this black octopus, of this multi-layered, difficult situation, and you're trying to juggle and balance and peel back all the different rancid onion layers, if you will. Forgive my Shrek. It's something you need to maybe let go of, move on. Or find a way in to do that somehow.
I'm going to go check our old friend Ibn Sirin for octopi, but I do not... Octopi?
Octopuses? I believe octopi.
I mean, given how on and off he is about animals and this, there's totally a chance it's in here.
Now, I'm also interested in the money.
Right. That was bizarre also.
And I know that, like, home health aid, I know that's kind of a strange term for most people, but I know based on Alyssa's occupation, that's a pretty common occurrence, working with people in their homes and there being home health aides. So that's not anything, I think, other than being a manifestation of a daytime plaque scrub of the brain. Things that happen during the day, if you will.
Gotta get in deep in that brain. Gotta brush.
So money can symbolize the importance and priority of someone or something, from the Rad Owl. Money can also refer to related subjects such as greed, stinginess, generosity.
I had a thought also when you were reading it. I wrote down that at that first moment in the shopping cart.
Yes.
She says, I had perhaps a dog.
Yes.
So it's like, I mean, it is a dream. So there's always, you know, that those moments where you glance at something and it's different when you glance back. But that did.
But later, I agree. But later to say, I asked the clerk if they could remove the octopus from my dog.
Speaking of dogs. Get out of here, Tao. You're not on the podcast.
Smacking your microphone with his
I know, I'm going to go close the door.
Tail. I'm going to go ahead and just go with dog. And let's see what dog says
in the dream.
Are you sure maybe dog's not in there? Perhaps a dog isn't in there?
Yes, perhaps a dog or maybe a dog or... dog-esque creature.
Doggish.
So it depends on the different quality of dogs in general that you associate with canines.
Strong values and good intentions appears to be a lot of it. Like loyalty. Well, yeah, man's best friend.
But at one point, this octopus is infiltrating loyalty or companionship, devotion, friendship. Or perhaps for some people, dogs are... Some people, their dogs are like their children. It's not really in the case around here in this apartment. We have our house plants, and that's just fine for us.
Yeah, but then it emerges out of her at the end. So it's almost like this multifaceted, shady what was it when we came up before? This sort of
multi-layered problem or issue.
That's a little bit, hidden? Like, parts of it are hidden or not easily understood or whatever, and it almost, it catches you by surprise.
Not super apparent, necessarily.
Right.
Maybe I wouldn't say ignored, but they aren't in the forefront, maybe.
Well, you're focusing on the dog, and you see it infiltrate the dog, too, in the dream, which is pretty nuts. And then, yes, all of a sudden, it's compromised you didn't even realize. So you probably, in this dream, this is one that I would want to watch if I had that, that dream machine. That'd be a crazy one to watch by M. Night Shyamalan and the Ying Dong. It's a good twist.
It does have that horror movie-esque vibe of the sneaky shadow octopus infiltrating your dog. and then there's the twist at the end. You have the octopus inside you or whatever. What were the things? Is it anamorphs that have the little slug things that crawl in your ears?
Oh, heck yeah, dude. Andalites. Yeah. Those are great. That's the right. Aliens that possess... Yeah, those things are... I don't know. Are they... Andalites are the ones with the little horns.
They're called like Yergs or something.
Yeah, centaur. I'm thinking of the blue centaur. Anyways, nice anamorph reference.
Yeah. Tight.
Okay, let's go ahead and try and piece together what this one may mean.
Yeah, let's tie it up here with a pretty bow.
Okay, so it looks like there's a lot
There's one more thing.
What's that?
Grocery store.
Oh, yeah.
Grocery store. Because, and here in J.M. DeBoard's Dream Interpretation Dictionary is grocery store. Let me read. This is how fortuitous.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah, this is really important. Now, one thing I've learned actually from reading a little bit about DeBoard's work is like one of the best ways, and we kind of already started doing this intuitively, I think a lot of people tend to, but it's a really good way to think about your dreams, is to make some sort of narrative, turn it into a story. So things like setting, characters,
right,
and the action. So let's talk about the setting of a grocery store. And here this entry reads, grocery store is a place commonly associated with making decisions about what to consume. And in dreams, consumption means what you take into yourself, be that media, information, opinions, knowledge, and so on. So like things that you are going to do in your life, things you're going to bring into your life. The symbolism is basically the same as shopping in any store.
So it's like your freedom and your need for fulfillment, kind of.
Yeah, but I think that's really interesting about making choices for your life, because that's true. When you go grocery shopping, those are very immediate choices that you're making. It's going to fuel
your life,
kilocalories, your life. I think that lends itself towards the octopus being this multifaceted issue or culmination of issues that are this situation of trying
perhaps
to decide.
It represents a lot of choices.
That could be
the danger.
Or a bunch of different ways that you could skin this thing. Or go forward with this issue. And it seems very mysterious, be that perhaps there's not a clear-cut outcome.
And there's a lot of threats of your friends getting hurt or whatever, but it ends up being you're the one.
Possibly.
Like, that's the dog. That's how I perceive the dog. Dogs are friends.
Okay, that's possible. So let's try to boil it down.
So you're out here, you're trying to get your life choices on track, right? You're trying to make those healthy life choices. You're picking all those organic life choices, but stuff already
free
is
range,
off. Right?
Life
but
choices.
Stuff's already off though. You've got the wrong money, so you're trying to make choices, but you don't have the means to make them yet, or you do, but it doesn't fit. It's incompatible, right? Because you have money.
At this point, there has to be some sort of transfer. That's interesting. Okay, keep
right.
going.
Right. And then you've got your friend. You got a friend with you, and you see your friend get possessed by what we, I think our consensus on the octopus was that it just represents problems that are difficult to perceive, like many layered problems that are difficult to perceive or hard to keep track of.
Mm.
There was that camouflage aspect. And so I'm thinking that that fits nicely with the twist at the end, because it is camouflaged. It somehow it emerges from you, but it enters the dog. It's like some sort of just a screwed up magic act that sounds like some terrifying body horror. But I guess in the symbols of it, I would perceive that as being kind of the same thing with the money, that you have the right reaction as to helping your friend in need, but you got to look after yourself at the same time. Otherwise, you know, you're just as susceptible, I guess. How about you? You got a freestyle on that one?
I think that is pretty good. And well, I would just add that with that octopus, I think also has to do with all the different combinations of options or like life choices or like things you could do. And a lot of them lead to unknown. And that's difficult.
Hey, you know that part in the
suss out.
You know that part in the Matrix where he's like, your brain makes it real. The fact that Alyssa woke up coughing is pretty awesome too, because that's the power of dreams right there.
Well, and we talked about in dream time, like with the really annoying sound I think we had from one listener, and it was the alarm clock. They woke up and their husband was like, off the alarm.
Yeah. It just stretches out. Yeah. That was a really good one. Thank you, Alyssa. That's a great submission. You got any other bits for that one, or do we want to tie it up?
I think I'm pretty satisfied with our
that was yeah there. I am too. That was a really good take there. I received a dream submission as well.
All right.
I wasn't given any instructions as far as anonymity, so I'm gonna go ahead and assume anonymity for this one. Okay, so it starts with the word mezzanine, which I didn't know. Do you know what a mezzanine is?
Yes.
Oh yeah, you're from New York. You would know. So a mezzanine, for those of you that don't have or don't live in an area that has a lot of two-story buildings, is sort of like a balcony, but like off to the side of a building, and you can chill underneath, right? Or like inside a building, kind of like a little extra top floor.
Yeah, it's kind of sometimes it's just a second story, depending on the construction, but generally there's some sort of balcony and like a look down into the main, what I would almost consider a lobby or entrance area.
Okay. I had no idea. I just wanted to clarify, but here's our submission. I'm falling asleep in a mezzanine at a friend's country house in the south of France, but suddenly I'm being attacked by a crowd of vampires and werewolves. All these people come out of nowhere to fight them with me, and I start scratching the werewolves' faces with my nails, and we get them to leave. Then we have a big party in a field, probably celebrating the fact that we're still alive, and there's a huge fire in the middle. We're all eating chocolate, all my friends are there, and we're having a picnic. And one of my friends is on a stage, he's doing a performance reading of a children's book. And at that point, I start feeling really weird, and I realize I'm still wearing my pajamas. So I grab a blue kimono and try to talk to my friend who is performing, but nothing comes out. And I notice that her head is turning into a pink monster, but I'm the only one who sees it and thinks it's strange. I start to get sleepy, but I'm scared of going back to the mezzanine alone, so I ask a friend if he could sit there and keep me company, but he doesn't want to, so I end up dancing by the fire. Suddenly, I see my brother is up there. I run to him to tell him what happened. I'm interrupted by yet another vampire werewolf attack. Everyone starts panicking and running away. I end up getting pulled into the crowd. I run into a bar, get my legs stuck in a staircase, and then I woke up. There's a lot there. That's a lot going on. But there's a couple recurring symbols, so I feel like this one's probably tackleable if we take a stab at the, like you said before, having that setting character's action.
Another good way to think about a mezzanine is a loft.
Okay, I like that.
Or especially like if it's in somebody's home, it's probably more like a loft space.
Yeah. So it starts with vampires and werewolves, which are not going to be in Ibn Sirin. So I'm gonna do a quick Google here for what vampires and werewolves.
I'm kind of in. So I've got vampires, and jammed aboard could be some sort of situation that's draining you, right? Some sort of situation that's draining you. Werewolves can be someone who has this sort of hidden dark side, if you will.
Oh, right. Yeah, okay, those are both really apt then. It's like, I'm reading repressed anger or uncontrollable violence, which is, yeah, you don't, if you're a werewolf, you know, right. You just get that full moon and go. It's not up to you.
So you got these draining persons and these people with some
uncontrollable violent tendencies, right?
Well, or just a dark side, I would say. Okay. Like Jekyll and Hyde, like a girl in middle school. Real nice to you to your face, and then she talks all the shit afterward. Sorry maybe for if all you stopped girls in middle school, but like, hey, not enough money in the world to make me go through that situation again.
You should have worn the Abercrombie Fall collection when it was fall, dude. That was on you. Yeah. It's entirely on you.
I would have not looked very good in the Abercrombie Fall collection in my middle school days. So what else do we have going on here?
So there's the big battle, and then they end up having a party in a field, eating chocolate and doing a reading of a children's book, which I perceive as just like the polar opposite of the first part of it, which is sort of like these very serious, very dangerous things happening. And then you get chocolate and children's books, which is just like the good, simple things in life that give you a giggle.
Now, were there vampires and werewolves at both of these?
There were vampires and werewolves that come out of nowhere
during
the country house, falling asleep on the mezzanine, and then get attacked by a werewolf and a vampire horde.
Got it. And so then you're falling asleep at a friend's house. You would in their country home. To me, a country home, that's like vacation. That's like you're trying to relax and have a good time. And here are some people coming in to ruin your relaxation.
Yeah, and they're trying to drain you too, which is not cool because you're trying to already recharge there at your vacation house, you know?
One of my favorite words or whatever, I mean, I absolutely hate these types of people, but I love the phrase, the turn of phrase, psychic vampires.
I'm not familiar.
It's essentially people who get in your head and like fuck around and try to play mind games or try to insert themselves. Not necessarily even gaslighting, but they just thrive on having people pay attention to them or that kind of shit.
Sounds like a subclass for Dungeons and Dragons or something. No, I actually play a psychic vampire. I use psionic damage.
Multi-class is a necromancer.
That would definitely be a multi-class.
So we have country home, and then what's the next place that we have?
Next place is a big field where they're doing the concert, kind of dancing, picnic thing. And there's some clothing, and clothing is usually a mainstay of my dreams, and so I wanted to look up what a kimono and what pajamas would mean. Neither of which, Ibn Sirin is kind of out of his element for this one, so I'm gonna go ahead and keep doing the dream moods, because it's...
Yeah, there's nothing for kimono in Jam to Board here.
Anything for pajamas?
Let's see, pyjamers.
It suggests that you need to relax. And if you're wearing pajamas in public, it means you're unaware of something important that's right in front of you.
Interesting. And this is while they're out at the field, is that correct? Yeah. Which I would assume would be public.
Yeah, okay, that's an interesting one. So there's something really important that's right in front of your face, and you didn't perceive it. And so you switch from that mindset to the kimono mindset, which is what?
It's a great question. Oh, here we go. Is this person Japanese, Scott?
No, I do not believe so.
Okay. If you see yourself wearing a kimono, even if you are not Japanese, it means that you carry with you tradition, honor, and duty.
Okay.
So it says that a kimono is a very good symbol to have in your dream.
Tradition and honor. Okay.
And duty.
Huh. And duty.
Duty.
Okay, I'm going to try to make a narrative here. I'm going to force this to make sense. So it starts out with the zombie attack, which the werewolf vampire attack at the country home. And our submitter here kind of is the hero and manages to hold their own and blast all these bad guys away. And then the party, you know, and it just sounds like it's a good party. I don't see too much intense symbolism in a children's book or chocolate, but I will look up chocolate right now.
I remember when they invented chocolate.
Did you say chocolate?
If they are at a concert or a picnic or this party, but they're wearing the pajamas in public, it means they really need to relax, right?
Means you need to relax and get some rest, or that you're unaware of something important that could be right in front of you.
Okay, there we go.
Yeah, that's the most interesting part of that. I like that. It's almost, I think I've had dreams where I'm wearing something that doesn't really apply to where I'm standing, and that's probably a similar symbol there. I'm gonna look this up real quick for chocolate.
Does chocolate count as candy?
That's not up to us, man. I think chocolate, greater minds need to tackle that one.
Chocolate is life, man.
Chocolate's great.
Candy in a dream can symbolize a forbidden pleasure.
Okay, forbidden pleasures. To see chocolate in your dream signifies, love, celebration, self-reward.
Sounds like a really good party.
Yeah, so it's just they had a victory party. I don't think that's a big part of the dream narrative here. But right afterwards, her friend, I think, starts like turning into a pink monster, like the head starts morphing.
Oh boy, when she's talking to her friends,
and they go back to the mezzanine. No, they want to go back to the mezzanine, and they ask a friend to keep company, but he doesn't want to, and so she ends up dancing around the fire instead.
So her friend turns into a pink monster, and instead she dances around the fire.
Well, her friend turns into a pink monster, and she goes and grabs someone else and says, "Hey, you know, this is messed up. I need to go. I want to go back. You know, my buddy head turning into a pink monster. Do you want to come with?" And the friend goes, "No, I'm good." And so she goes, "Fine, fuck it," and starts dancing around a fire. Which, actually, dancing.
So pink is closely associated with affection and romance, and can also symbolize the need for aforementioned ideas. So if you have a friend that's turning into this, like, weird, needing affection from you monster.
Oh.
Maybe there's a friend in your life who's nice. Like, "Hey, do you want to like get together?" But he's like a monster. He or she is like a monster about it. I'm just connecting the dots, my dude.
I like that. I like that dot connecting you're doing there. One thing that I thought was interesting is that it ends with another attack, but this time they're not as good at staving it off. They run, and it ends with a foot caught in a staircase. So I want to see if that's like the, you know, the punctuation point at the end of this dream. I really want to, I think there's special significance perhaps there. What does a staircase even mean? I wonder if Ibn Sirin probably knows staircases. A staircase in your dream symbolizes change and transformation.
Right.
Oh, because you're going to the next stage.
Associated with movement up or down. Steps can trip you up. Thank you, James DeBord, for that pun. This is interesting. Also consider the idea in the phrase, take steps to protect yourself. So you're running up the steps trying to get away.
Yeah, you know what? Ibn Sirin's got the same thing. Advancement in worldly gains.
Ooh.
And you get your foot caught in your worldly gains that you're advancing. You're right. It gets our foot stuck in the staircase.
Let's see. What yeah, or you're heck? Trying to, yeah, you're trying to get to the next level, whether that be of like peace of mind or of maturity in a relationship of some kind.
Ibn Sirin actually has exactly this context as well. If you are hindered or impeded during your climb up the staircase in the dream, right, that would apply.
Mm-hmm.
It means that a gift or a boon to you is being detained, and the blessings of that gift will be hidden to you.
Oh.
Yeah, because it is like you're going from one level to the next, but if you get hurt on the stairs, it's like, you know, whatever, we all scuff our knees on the stairs every once in a while. That doesn't mean you give up. You gotta keep climbing.
But it's something, a gift or a boon is hidden. Now, to me, in this dream, there's a whole lot of symbols about friends and about dark sides. And so if I'm going to boil this down, I think that you are trying to find peace in your life and like just go, you just want to go to the concert and then go crash in the loft, in the mezzanine, and have yourself a real good time. But there are people who you love and you trust in your life, or just people that are involved in your life that are either draining you of some sort of energy via the vampire, or have some alternate side to them that's really difficult to be with, a la the werewolf, or perhaps have some, they want to advance the relationship in a way that you don't want to, a la the pink monster. And these are the things that are tripping you up in your transcendence to your next state of stasis in life, or next,
your next level.
Taking it to the next, taking life to the next level.
Nice, dude. That was really good. I like that a lot. That was a good one.
I will take small bow.
I think that's a perfect way. You're right. That was all. That was a big relationship dream, which when I was reading it at first, it did not seem, I didn't expect the symbols to be that much about the character of other people, I guess.
It was super doozy.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks for that. Thank you, anonymous submitter. That was a cool one. Do you have any other thoughts on that one, Connor? You want to?
I think my work here is done.
All right, cool, man. You haven't had any dreams recently, have you?
You know, last night I did, and this for me is somewhat of a reoccurring theme or phenomena, and it's the good old fashioned, hey Connor, it's time to go on stage for this play. Are you ready? And I'm not ready.
Oh, classic.
And I don't have my lines memorized.
Oh, nice.
And this has never happened to me in real life. This is just not something that I do. But it's super frightening. Just the idea of it. To me, it's worse than, or perhaps equitable to the being naked at school in front of all the world.
You know, sorry to interrupt, but we do talk a lot about how the a lot of the power from dreams comes from the, you're fooled into thinking it's real. And so you have very right. real reactions to these scary situations that would never arise normally. I have had similar dreams to what you're describing, the kind of like, you know, oh, he's at school and his pants are like, where are your pants? And it's like, oh, I forgot my pants, you know, that kind of thing. I can't remember.
Right, how the hell would you get to school and right. not have pants? But I remember. Wouldn't happen, but you totally believe that it's going on.
I remember, though, that feeling being similar to the feeling of waking up too late for a test. Like, that just gut sinking, like, oh no, kind of.
Yeah, waking up late for work or whatever it is. Yeah.
I haven't had that in a long time, thank God. But
ditto.
But in a dream, you can easily get to that level of awkward. Like, I feel like you, especially if you're always well prepared for your bits and stuff, that must have struck you especially hard. Being
what was funny is because it ended up like the play I was supposed to do was like a total of 5 pages long or less, and I had some lines or whatever. And most of the time when I have this dream, I don't have to follow through with the performance. It's all just like the shame ahead of time and the what am I gonna do. But this time, not only did I follow through with it and like had my script on stage and it was pretty bunk, but people were talking to me afterward, and there was this one mom and her kid that came up to me, and they were asking me all these questions like about the character and about the play, and I couldn't really answer them. And they're like, yeah, we've seen a production of this before, and you don't really know what you're talking about. And I'm just kind of like, you're right.
You got me.
Alternatively, I've had this similar type of dream where I'm not ready for the performance. And this one was cool. Maybe I'll save this one to talk about sometime.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I did have a question about your dream you were telling me about just now.
Yeah. Well, give me a question.
What environment were you in? Were you in like a theater, or were you, I don't know, at the Gamage Gardens out front or something?
Honestly, it was more like a middle school multi-purpose room auditorium where you'd also eat lunch, but at nighttime would have a performance. You know what I mean?
Okay, yeah. So not like an old Greek amphitheater like I was imagining in my mind's eye or something.
No, but it does make sense. I have a lot of different projects on the burner. Well, a couple of projects on the burner. I make myself sound busier than I really am, but
do you remember any of your lines or like your motives as a character as you were reading the lines?
No, not necessarily, but I feel like it was like a play about high school kids.
Okay, so you were playing a high school kid.
Yeah.
So it says here that to dream about the theater, tends to signify your social life, because there's all these characters, you know, acting out roles. But if that's not really pertinent, because you don't remember any of your lines or your characters. Do you remember any of your other actors on the stage?
I feel like there were also people I knew in high school. And usually when I have this dream, it's about when I've been in high school. Like, I remember one time I had this dream, and it was before we went on stage, and it was my high school theater teacher and often director, Mr. Carter, and I was just really having to be upfront with him, like, look, I am not really ready to go on.
Were you the only one boofing your lines?
Absolutely, yeah, I was the only one not prepared, which is not me.
All right, I'm going to take a stab at this. I think that this is your dream that's telling you, I mean, like, and I know you, so I get to take a little liberty here. But you have a very busy life. You're working a lot. You live in New York City. That's the large apple, you know. You've got this producing part time gig here for the podcast. So you've got a lot on your plate. And so I imagine you probably live a very, what's the word I'm looking for? Disciplined life, probably.
I live that George W. Bush fighter jet lifestyle.
You do. So this is your dream telling you, like, hey, man, every once in a while, it's kind of out of your hands. It's going to happen. You know, just be prepared for it. This is your simulation. It's running for the day that you forget your lines while lifeguarding, you know, instead of blowing your whistle, you suck into it and it doesn't make any noise. Just one day. It's like, yeah.
I think it's a combination of that and just being anxious that I'm going to be able to pull off these next two gigs I've got coming up. The end of July and the end of August, which I know I'm going to be able to. It's just a matter of doing the prep.
Mm. Yeah, make sure you do your, that's all your brain is telling you, man. It's just make sure you do your prep. It seems like it's got some confidence in you, right? If it wouldn't cast you for that part if you didn't think you'd be good at it.
Thanks, Scott. Yeah. Actually going to meet with a gentleman after we podcast to go talk about another project, maybe for September.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Don't hesitate. Lines. Yeah, yeah. Hesitate to spend an extra 5 minutes on that five pager. That was a good submission. And for those of you listening, if you have a cool submission that you would like to hear these two dweebs take apart, feel free to send it in. The dreamboatpodcast@gmail.com is a great route to do that.
So just to be clear, there's no the. It's just
right.
dreamboatpodcast@gmail.com.
Correct.
You can also get at us on that Facebook page.
I mean, those are the two best routes for submissions, but we always respect requests for anonymity. And you know what? If you have any dream questions, I'm open to doing a little bit of research too, because I mean, we talked about this, I think, only in our first and second episode. Nobody really knows what's going on. And I mean, I know a few years ago there was that grant to do a bunch of brain research. I have a feeling that in the next 10 years, we're actually probably going to have some pretty groundbreaking, you know, dream stuff. And like we read at the beginning of this episode, that dictionary is going to get more fleshed out the more they keep forcing those people to take naps in an MRI machine. So
dream machines.
Not what a time to be alive and dreaming, you know?
Yeah, what a time. What a time.
What do you say, Connor? Do you want to wrap up or do we got time for another?
I think it's just a boot that time.
Just a boot? Right on. Well, this has been the Dreamboat Podcast. As always, I am Scott.
And I have been, and usually am, Connor.
And you know what? Sweet dreams are made of these two boys.
Yeah, man. Who am I to disagree?
Oh, nice.